Oh, man. Okay, today's episode of the podcast, this is going to be unscripted. I have had a whirlwind over the last 24, 48 hours. Nothing serious. Everything's okay. Don't worry about it. But if you have watched the NFL, if you watch the NFL draft, you know exactly what I'm talking about. But regardless, some big NHL news to get to. The Seattle Kraken to the NHL is official. We got to talk some other teams clinching the postseason and a whole lot more here. Episode 69, Second Thoughts Hockey Podcast. Let's go. Welcome in on this Friday edition, the 69th episode of the Second Thoughts Hockey Podcast. Kyle Gamard, your host here. And it's been... Today, if I sound a little bit disgruntled, a little upset... So the NFL draft was yesterday. Right, an exciting time for fans and whatnot. And I've come on here before, and I know a couple of people that listen are big Green Bay Packers fans. And this bombshell dropped yesterday that quarterback Aaron Rodgers will not be returning to the team. I'm a big fan of his. I've been an advocate of his for as long when they first got him and everyone was on Team Brett Favre. If you don't know what I'm talking about, I apologize, but Green Bay back in 2005 drafted Aaron Rodgers. Their quarterback at the time was Brett Favre, legendary quarterback. Sat for a couple years. All the fans were upset. Brett Favre was upset. He leaves. Rodgers comes in. He's a superstar. Wins a Super Bowl. Three MVPs. Is arguably the greatest Packer of all time. And news is coming out now that Aaron Rodgers is... he's saying he's told some teammates that he does not want to return to the team. Now, I'm texting back and forth a friend of mine saying that... So people are saying he's not going anywhere. He's going somewhere. But this is, it's a bad situation. It's not a good time to be a Green Bay Packer fan. And the draft last night, the draft's a lot of fun. If the NHL ever wants to consider how they want to improve the league in terms of viewings and everything like that, go watch the NFL draft. The NFL draft is done so spectacularly. Same thing with the NHL. You know, Gary Bettman is not liked by the fans. Well, the commissioner of the National Football League, Roger Goodell, is not particularly liked by fans either. But last night, as he's making picks, he doesn't care. He's sitting in a chair. He's lounging around. He's got a drink with him. Like, it's just, it's beautiful television. And he's making picks, and players are, their dreams are coming true. And he's bear hugging these guys, and they're just high-fiving. What a great time. And just... last night, you know, hopes, every team's hope goes up. They get a prospect and a guy who can instantly impact their lineup. And just so much fun to watch. The NHL really needs to take notes on how the NFL does it because, man, it was fun to watch. It was like, it's like 3.5-4 hours long for just the first round, but it's worth it. There were trades, teams were moving up, teams were moving down, teams stayed patient, players fell into other teams' laps. But again, unless you're a... if you're a Green Bay Packers fan, a Houston Texans fan, if outside of those two fan bases, last night was a great night. Chicago got a quarterback. New England got a quarterback. San Francisco drafted the right quarterback. Teams got exactly the needs that they want. And Aaron Rodgers doesn't want to be a Packer anymore. So I apologize if I'm a little on edge about that. But we do have to get into the podcast because there are some news and notes around the National Hockey League. Make sure you follow along at ST Hockey Podcast on Instagram and Twitter. I'm going to do this. So normally when I do the podcast, by the way, as well, I do edits. So like there's a couple times where I mess up and I just re-record that part and I edit it down and I make it. So I'm going to try and do this all in one take. All in one take. I haven't had the time today to do notes. But I've been following along. I do have some rough notes in front of me right here, but I normally take a couple hours and really sift through and find specific things. But today we're going off the cuff because Kyle's pissed. Kyle's not having a good day. Aaron Rodgers doesn't want to be the friggin' quarterback of my team. I'm going to be on Mike Stubbs' show later on tonight on 980 CFPL. It's called Friday Nights, just after 7 o'clock. A lot of things to get around in the National Hockey League. And more episodes if you want to follow along. Spotify, Google Podcasts, Apple Podcasts. We're going to start with the first big story today. It is official. As of today, the Seattle Kraken are officially being released as the 32nd team in the National Hockey League. The Seattle franchise made its final expansion payment today, formally becoming the NHL's 32nd team. The announcement was just made. David Bonderman and the Bonderman family and their partners were the ones that helped with the Seattle Kraken organization. The Kraken now are now permitted to begin building their roster through trades and signings. They can attend league meetings, vote on rule proposals, and receive confidential league information. The expansion draft is set to take place on July 21st, and teams are required to submit their protected players list, if you remember this is what they did with Vegas, by July 17th, and Seattle will begin their season next year. This is big because basically we've been hearing little rumblings and grumblings of the way that Seattle is going to run their franchise, right? And you couldn't do anything because they weren't necessarily a team just yet. But this was the time where you could start pre-planning which players you assumed or predicted would become available for each team and have, and this is just like, again, this is all ties into the draft last night with the National Football League. Seattle Kraken have been doing these mock drafts, if you've been seeing them online, mock drafts of players that are available, which teams they can fleece for guys that take up a huge amount of cap space because there's been a flat cap for some time. They've been doing this for months, like months and months and months, like well before the season even remotely started, like 2020 we're talking. And finally now, they can officially start calling teams and letting them know of their plans. Now they can start reaching out to teams like Vancouver. I mean, like, hey, we see that Louis Erickson takes up $6.5 million. That's gotta suck. You want us to do something about it? Hey, Calgary. Milan Lucic is really taking up a lot. And I know he's playing games for you, and you keep telling the world that he plays an important, impactful presence on this team. But we'll take him off your hands if you want. There are some teams in dire needs of cap relief. Seattle is a team that will absolutely expose you. Now, the rich teams are fine. Toronto, Montreal, Boston, New York Rangers, all those teams are fine. But teams that hurt, the Arizona Coyotes are in shambles right now. Not shambles. They're actually doing pretty good right now as I go check on their standings. But I'm talking about cap situation. Phil Kessel's no longer there. Taylor Hall's no longer there. There were rumors about trading Oliver Ekman-Larsson. Right? On top of all that, they have no cap space. Zero. And I'm not going to be blown... I honestly would not be blown away if Oliver Ekman-Larsson became available for the expansion draft. Wouldn't be the craziest thing. I doubt it'll happen because you can still get something for him and you need something for him. But that just means you're going to be exposing someone else on that defense. Now, maybe it's not a big deal for them, but I'm looking at Arizona. So they're just outside of a playoff spot right now. St. Louis is 5 points up with two games in hand. So their playoff run's likely done. But man, this is going to be fun. Now you're going to start hearing rumors and murmurs about Seattle reaching out to certain teams, specifically teams that are in a little bit of cap trouble that could use some alleviated help. And that's where the Kraken come in. Remember, what was it? It was the Florida Panthers, right? Florida gave up, I think, Vincent Trocheck was somewhere else. But they gave up, like, it was Riley Smith and Jonathan Marchessault so that they wouldn't take somebody else. So you basically got two impact players, Riley Smith no longer playing, but Marchessault is a top six forward on the Vegas Golden Knights and a key contributor to that team so that they wouldn't take somebody else. Right? Because they're going to have to expose, each team's going to have to expose a player. There'll be the odd team where there's a guy we're like, man, we really don't want to expose this player, but we have to. We have to expose them because we can't. There's certain rules and regulations, like some players get protected, right? Players who are within the first, couple of years are on the rookie deals, they are exempt from it. So certain guys, like it happened to work out for the Toronto Maple Leafs because a couple players before Vegas jumped on scene were exempt. So Toronto didn't have to protect some of their stars. So they protect everybody. So they basically give up Brandon Leipzig, who, outside of some bad texts afterwards, no longer plays in the league. Right? But some teams got real fleeced. And Seattle is going to use the... If you think Seattle is not going to use the exact template T, like absolute T to T, as to what Vegas did to build their immediately impactful roster, you are sadly mistaken. Sadly mistaken. They are going to be a very good team, strictly because about half the teams, I think, I remember looking at this on Cap Friendly, of the 31 other teams in the NHL, I think more than half of them, or at least half of them, had zero cap space. I think 20 of the teams had $2 million or less. And there was only like a handful of teams that had $3 or $4 million to play with. Colorado was one of those teams. And then this past offseason, they made a bunch of deals and they dropped down to like two. So there are a lot of teams with cap issues and the cap ain't going up. It's not going up. It's going to stay the way it is. A lot of teams sign contracts and players based on the cap slowly increasing each and every year. It's not going up next year. It's a flat cap again because the league has lost so much money. They need to pay back everything and start building their capital. Seattle is going to use that exact template and now can officially start talking to teams, signing guys, trading guys. It's going to be fun. It's going to be a lot of fun. It just makes for another storyline heading into the NHL postseason. And I can't wait for it. Okay, I want to move on to this here. Just by looking at it. So I remember back on Tuesday, before the weekend, I had said that, you know, a couple other teams, I think at that time only there were two teams that had qualified for the postseason, the Vegas Golden Knights, Colorado Avalanche. And I said by the weekend, there could be a couple more. Well, since then, a boatload of other teams have qualified. And they are teams that we all expected to. In the NHL Central Division, Carolina has grabbed a playoff spot, the Florida Panthers qualified, and of course the Tampa Bay Lightning. There is one spot available right now. It is going to come down to the final game. It's going to be between a couple different teams. It's going to be between the Nashville Predators, which occupy the spot right now, who have five games left, Dallas Stars, who are at 54 points, two behind Nashville with a game in hand, and the Chicago Blackhawks, who have played 50 games, have 50 points. They're about 6 points back. They're a little less likely, but it's still plausible. Of those two teams, I think Dallas has been playing better. Dallas finds a way to sneak in, but they're going to get crushed in the first round by Carolina. Actually, you know what? I'm going to take that back because last year I was saying the same thing and Dallas made it all the way. They're going to get Tyler Seguin back soon. The big question is their goaltending. I don't think Dallas matches up well against Carolina. I think Carolina's a wagon, but Dallas could be the team that sneaks in. I'm not sold on Nashville. They don't score enough. They've had this issue for like a decade. They can't score goals. And they've been losing games to important teams that they need to beat. That's going to be a fun race. Over in the NHL East Division, two teams have qualified, and it's only a matter of time before these four teams qualify. Washington Capitals, Pittsburgh Penguins, both locked in at 69 points apiece. The New York Islanders are right behind them at 65. They will qualify within the next couple of days, probably by the weekend. And then the Boston Bruins have just been on an absolute tear lately. They still have a game in hand on the Islanders and are at 64 points. They could leapfrog them and end up playing Pittsburgh in the first round. That's the one division where the whole rankings in terms of, well, no, I guess in the NHL Central as well, but the Capitals are at the top right now. That could change quick. Pittsburgh could be there. The Islanders could be there. Boston could be there when it's all said and done. Going to be a ton of fun. The Rangers had a heck of a run. They played 51 games, have 58 points. They're still 6 points back of Boston, and Boston has two games in hand. So that one, I think, is just, they had a heck of a run. They're going to be a good team for a very long time. Over in the NHL North, only one team has actually qualified for the Stanley Cup playoffs. That is the Toronto Maple Leafs. 69 points. They did it last night with a victory, or a couple nights ago with a victory over the Montreal Canadiens. And it coincided with the Vancouver Canucks losing to the Ottawa Senators. By the way, the Vancouver Canucks dead last in the North Division. They have some games in hand on Ottawa. They will probably pass them. But who would have, man, they just, what a whirlwind. What a completely different team from last year in the second round, taking Vegas to 7 in the playoffs. Just ridiculous. Edmonton sitting behind 9 points with 60 points. They'll qualify in the next little bit. Winnipeg is kind of taking a little bit of a stumble. Nikolaj Ehlers is out for the rest of the year, like we mentioned last episode, 57 points. And then the last spot right now, Montreal's got it, but they're really not fighting for it. Calgary just beat them last night 3-1. They move within 4 points of that spot. The Montreal Canadiens have 8 games remaining, and the Calgary Flames have 7. So, going to be a fun little battle towards the end. I think Montreal just has the edge just based on the inside position they currently have. And at some point, I think they'll start turning it around. They're missing some pieces right now, too. Jonathan Drouin is not there. Cole Coffey has been playing, but, you know, it's just... I don't think Brendan Gallagher's actually there either. So a couple really big pieces that they might get back in the next little bit, and that will really set them up for the postseason. So they should be able to swing back into it, but as of right now, still will be a fun little race towards the end there. But looking at the postseason, you know, I mentioned this back on one of the earlier episodes that all but two playoff spots were basically locks. And that number is still the same. Oh, sorry, I completely forgot to mention the NHL West. Minnesota Wild, actually. Minnesota was actually the third team in the NHL to qualify for playoffs. What a turnaround. We talked about Vancouver doing a 180 going the other way. How about Minnesota? Third position, they're tied with Colorado with 66 points. They are a wagon. Now, Colorado's played 2 less games, but good on Minnesota, good on the rookie goaltender, good on the rookie superstar Kaprizov. What a turnaround for that. Good for Minnesota. That's a good hockey town, a good hockey market. They deserve playoff hockey. And then I mentioned that last spot, we talked about Arizona a little bit earlier on. The St. Louis Blues occupy the 4th and final spot in the NHL West Division. That was the other one I was talking about that could be up for grabs. I said Vegas, Colorado, Minnesota were locks. And then it was probably going to be St. Louis, though Arizona still has that opportunity. But Arizona, like I mentioned earlier, 5 points up behind, and they played 2 more games than St. Louis. St. Louis still has 8 games remaining, so could be interesting. But those 2 final playoff spots... those were the ones that I predicted and I suggested might be the 2 that come down to the wire. Everything else was a lock. The North Division's still a little close, and if you're a Calgary fan, I'm sorry, but I don't think the Flames get in. They're still 5 points behind. They're still 4 points behind right now, Montreal, and they've played 1 extra game. They do have a little bit of a series, and Montreal really has to stumble. And if listen, it's possible they go on a run and get in. It really is. But you are asking... your team, who has not been able to follow through and really step up to the challenge at all this season, outside of maybe Jacob Markstrom, and you're asking them to basically win down the stretch here, have Montreal falter, and find a way to have that 1 game and 4 points made up for in 6 games. So, going to be very difficult to see with them. But, yeah, Montreal leaving that door open just a smidge to see who wants to come in here. Okay, I want to talk about the Toronto Maple Leafs here, and then I want to talk about Taylor Hall for a second. Right, you remember a week ago, Toronto Maple Leafs, they lost, I think it was back-to-back games against the Vancouver Canucks, won in overtime, 1-6-3. That was when the Canucks had just come back from COVID, and Toronto was expected to just annihilate them. And I mentioned this too. I'm like, analytics have a place in the game. They have a place in the hockey world, right? They have a place in sports in general. But you cannot dictate an entire team, an entire game solely on analytics. You need to watch the game because there are just sometimes unforeseen circumstances that just happen and you have to deal with it. Right, all these analytics numbers about expected wins and goals for, and you know how many times you're on the ice per second for this, and all that stuff. And I know a little bit about analytics and Corsi for and against. So like having possession of the puck is a good thing. Creating scoring chances is a good thing, but sometimes that's not the end all be all to winning games. Sometimes a goalie stands on their head and screws you over. Sometimes a referee misses a call and screws you over. Sometimes you hit 4 posts in a game and that screws you over. Things happen. The flow of the game changes. Momentum changes. I doubt there's an analytic for momentum, but I tell you right now, momentum's a real thing. Team wins a fight, you are right back on, and all of a sudden you're right back in the momentum. You're driving play. Your puck possession's easier, right? Your mindset changes. You're confident again. Toronto lost their confidence for a little bit. They also took their foot off the gas a little bit. They should have beaten Vancouver back-to-back games, but they didn't. Why? Because Braden Holtby had a two-game set where he was spectacular, and he gave up 5 goals in those games. But he made like 39-plus saves in both games. Toronto hit a bunch of posts. They couldn't score on their power play, and they got horrendous goaltending. And that's the other thing, too. You couldn't be expected to win, and your goaltender has an off night. Jack Campbell and Dave Rittich played both those games. Jack Campbell played the first one, Rittich the second. Rittich was horrendous in the 6-3 loss. Campbell wasn't his best in the 3-2 loss. It happens. You learn from it. You build off of it. You move on. I remember saying, too, after that overtime loss, I'm like, Toronto will be fine. They'll probably win. They didn't. But I was like, they're going to be all right. Like, they're all right. They've also gone 2-for-47. They were like 2-for-46 or 2-for-47 at one point on their power play. That wasn't going to last. You have Austin Matthews, Mitch Marner, John Tavares, William Nylander, Morgan Riley. And that's your first unit. You got a whole second unit. Rasmus Sandin has come on, right? Nick Foligno's now a member there. He instilled a little bit of confidence into that team. He made his team debut. He's got points, I think, in every single game he's played so far. Phenomenal. Alex Galchenyuk's come on. Adam Brooks looks like a player. Jason Spetz is playing well. Simmons is fighting. Jack Campbell's got back the crease. And oh, by the way, they're missing Zach Hyman, Zach Bogosian, and Frederik Andersen. You're allowed to lose a couple games, even when you outplay the opponents. And I get the Toronto media is so much harder on this team than any other media format is on any other team across the NHL. Maybe Montreal's another team, but I've been saying it all year long. There's something different about this team. And it has nothing to do with analytics, nothing to do with their numbers. Visibly, they're not turning the puck over. They're not getting pushed around by teams. And I know the North Division isn't necessarily the toughest team, but I remember Montreal pushing them around a bit. I remember Winnipeg pushing them around a bit in previous years. They're not taking any of that nonsense this year. Rasmus Sandin stopped up, got his back up, and slammed into a dude. We talked about that on the last episode of the podcast, about the Leafs were a quote-unquote dirty team. Sandin's like 6'1", 175, 180 pounds, and Blake Wheeler, the guy who took the hit, is like 6'4", 220. Like, he's bracing for contact because the team dynamic has changed. They don't get caught up in the moment. They don't let it mentally get to them. They're a different team. Am I saying they're going to win the Stanley Cup or go to the finals or even win a round? No. But the reasons if they lose this year will be significantly different from the reasons that they've lost in years prior. It's a different team. They have everything. They are loaded on the wings. Centers are playing wing right now because they're loaded everywhere. They're plugging guys into the lineup, and Adam Brooks is scoring goals, and Pierre Engvall scoring goals, and Ilya Mikheyev is scoring goals. You're like, yeah, okay, but they're probably making up for Marner scored last night. Matthews scored last night. Nylander scored last night. Like, the big guns show up too. Analytically, just because you are analytical darlings doesn't result in championships. It just doesn't. Tampa Bay dealt with a multitude of injuries last year. They had Luke Shen and Zach Bogosian on their, like, top four. Because Victor Hedman was out, Ryan McDonough was out, Steven Stamkos was out. And the analytics came out. And the chances of them winning a championship took a hit. They still won it. Even though their analytical numbers went down and their expected goals went down and their expected goals against went up because Hedman wasn't there. And they're still holding teams in check. They're still playing with a purpose. Analytically, was Columbus supposed to sweep Tampa Bay a few years back? No. How many analytically darling Washington Capitals teams should have won the Stanley Cup before they did in 2018? Really think about this. The President's Trophy winning, offensively dominant, right? Back in the days where Mike Green was scoring 80 points and Ovechkin was scoring 65 and Backstrom was scoring 75 assists a year. They were dominant. They were analytical. They had good goaltending. Sometimes you got to watch the games because things change on you, man. They change. Now Toronto's won, was it four straight, five straight, four straight games. Jets, back-to-back games against the Jets, Canadians, Vancouver. They've scored a minimum four goals in all four games. They are rolling into the postseason. And they're going to get guys back. Riley Nash, who they acquired for literally nothing, is one of the better fourth-line centers in hockey. He's a shutdown machine. But now you have Adam Brooks, who's playing there, who looks great because he's playing with two legends and he's pumped. Zach Hyman's not there. Doesn't matter. Galchenyuk's picking up points. Foligno's there. All your superstars are there. Zach Bogosian comes out. Morgan Riley rests last night. Doesn't matter. Rasmus Sandin, this rookie defenseman, comes in, plays 21 minutes, has an assist, couple shots, couple hits, couple blocks. Fills in, is like Morgan Riley wasn't even missed. And I know he was because he's an important player of that team. But now you're like, all right, so if someone gets hurt, guys can step in. They're learning. That was their big issue last year. When Jake Muzzin got hurt last year, the defense crumbled. They had no idea what to do. So they went and loaded up and got bigger, tougher, stronger, deeper. Guys have another year under their belts. Morgan Riley comes out. Rasmus Sandin steps in. Zach Bogosian gets hurt. Well, then Timothy Liljegren comes in. He looked great last night. Someone wants to rest. Ben Hutton comes in. He looked all right. Limited minutes. Protected role. TJ Brody's playing a lot. Jake Muzzin's playing a lot. Justin Hall's playing a lot. All those analytical teams... All the analytics is not going to be the reason Toronto wins a cup. Analytics isn't going to be the reason Toronto wins a round. Analytics help. Having possession helps. Generating scoring chances help. But I don't need analytics to tell me that. You watch games. You watch them exit the zone. You watch them enter. You watch them physical along the boards. You watch them cycle the puck. You watch them communicating with one another. Right? You're seeing simplicity. You're seeing simple plays from the point. Pucks on net. Jake Muzzin scored a goal that was tipped in by a Montreal Canadian. Why? Because he put the puck on net. Was it the analytically greatest thing he could have done? Probably not. Guess what? Puck went in the net. Just because analytically your numbers are horrendous, that was the big thing. Everyone was upset and people are, all these analytics nerds online are coming out because Nick Foligno isn't analytically as good as Taylor Hall. By the way, we're going to get to Taylor Hall in a little bit because he's been fantastic in Boston. Well, he's immediately injected juice into the lineup. He's played all over the place. He plays penalty kill, which has gotten better since he's been there, and he's picked up a point in every single game he's played in while throwing hits, being smart, being simple. Analytically, he sucked in Columbus, supposedly. Analytics aren't everything, people. They are a part of the game, but they are not everything. Okay, let's move on here to... I want to talk Taylor Hall here. And I have been hard on Taylor Hall, right? And not hard as in, like, I'm not calling him out and saying he's a piece of you-know-what, right? He's garbage, he's a waste. But... when you look at someone's past, it often predicates how they behave in the future. You've heard this statement before in relationships. Once a cheater, always a cheater. If someone's cheated before, and all kudos to you if you've been in a relationship or you have cheated and said that you're going to change, that person has taken you back and you are a changed person, by all means. But the urge is always there. Right? One of the things I'm very proud of is that even when I was a teenager, right, I've never cheated on anybody in a relationship. I've been cheated on, but I've never had that impulse before. It's very wrong having, you know, that being a part of my childhood growing up. It was something that I never wanted to do. It's the same thing, like I'm proud to say I've never smoked a cigarette before, right? But once you have certain habits, it's hard to break them. Like, for instance, I bite my nails, right? I pick them, I bite them. It's an ugly habit. It's disgusting. It's gross. I understand that. My girlfriend, Emma, is just the sweetest thing ever. She is doing everything in her power to help me get over it, to help me not do it as much. And I've cut down, but I still catch myself doing it every now and then, right? Your history, your past predicates how you're going to be. You can change, but sometimes old habits die hard. So Taylor Hall, when I have talked about him, has come out to the public and said, I want to go to a winner. I want to be successful. I want to play meaningful games, right? He was drafted by Edmonton. It didn't work out there. He got moved and he got traded to New Jersey. That was not his choice. But he said, I want to go to a winner. And by all means, his one heart trophy, he got Jersey to the playoffs. I think they got swept or they lost in five games, but they got there, right? And then things didn't work out afterwards, right? And he got moved again. He gets moved to Arizona. And Arizona made a little bit of a push, but they didn't necessarily go there. But he had always said, I want to go to a winner. I want to go to a winner. And he had a history of playing on bad teams. So what does he do in the offseason? He says, he's a free agent at this point. So now for the first time in his career, he has free reign to go wherever he wants. He says, I want to go to a winner. I want to go to contender. I want to play meaningful hockey games. I want to win. He signs a one-year, $8 million contract in Buffalo. Well, he has the worst season of his career. Worst season up until the trade deadline. Had like 2 goals and 17 assists. And he says, it's just not working out here. And then he gets asked a question like, would you be open to a trade? And he said, yeah, of course I'd be open to a trade. And I don't blame him. It's been horrible in Buffalo. And by the way, I'm very mindful of the fact that, yes, before the season started, a lot of people were hopeful on Buffalo. I wasn't one of them because they didn't address their needs, right? A lot of people did, talk about the Toronto Maple Leafs and how they've steered into the skid and how, they're an offensive team. What do? They just keep getting more offense and more offense and more offense. Well, it didn't work for them. So what did they do this offseason? They got TJ Brody and Zach Bogosian and Wayne Simmons, and they got tougher and bigger and harder to play against. Well, Buffalo's biggest needs going into this past offseason were defense and goaltending. They traded for Eric Staal and they signed Taylor Hall. Defensively, they didn't change. They have names on defense, but the year before, their defense wasn't very good. Their goaltending, there's no elite goaltender. There's no great goaltender there. Linus Allmark has played decently, but he's not proven to be a 100% starting goaltender. So Buffalo has one of the worst seasons. Now they've made some coaching changes. They've actually been competitive as of late because there's no pressure on them. But Taylor Hall moves, right? I'm getting around to the point here. And Taylor Hall moves, and Taylor Hall goes to the Boston Bruins. And everyone's like, oh, it's beautiful. You watch Taylor Hall is going to go there. He's going to light it up, man. Well, duh. Why wouldn't he light it up there? He's not playing against the best. He's not playing on the top line with Bergeron and Pasternak and Marchand. He's playing on a second line with an incredibly intelligent center and grossly underrated in David Krejci, who is very good at distributing the puck. And David Krejci has really never played with superstar players. Now, mind you, there were times where Krejci was playing. They were splitting up the perfection line. And there were times where he was playing with Pasternak and Marchand. And, well, Krejci normally put up numbers. You got to remember, David Krejci, I'm going to bring up his numbers here because I don't think you realize, like, how productive David Krejci was as a player. David Krejci's been a Boston Bruin for a very long time, by the way. And he's got that Boston mentality where you take less money and you win for championships and you do it for the team. But I want to point this out. David Krejci, 2008-2009, 22 goals, 51 assists, 73 points. 2009-2010, 79 games, 52 points. 2010-2011, 62 points. 2011-2012, 62 points. 2013-2014, 69 points. 2015-2016, 63 points. 2016-2017, 54 points. In 64 games in 17-18, he had 44 points. 18-19, 73 points. As early as 2 years ago. And this year has 34 points in 45 games. He is very Nicholas Backstrom-like. 956 career games, 720 career points. Not point per game, but that is a very productive player for an extremely long period of time. So of course Taylor Hall was going to flourish there. You're playing with a 60 to 65 point player, 2 years ago, 70 point player, and you're a former Hart Trophy winner on the second line of a Stanley Cup contending team. This should have been your move originally. This should have been the move. Because this just makes sense when you look at it. Right? Obviously, Buffalo's eating half of that contract right now. So financially, it makes sense. But if he had talked to Boston in the offseason, being like, listen, I understand that this is, you know, it's a tough market. I still want to get some money, but I want to go to a winning team. How can we do this? But instead, Buffalo was probably the only team that could offer him $8 million, and he ran and took it. And like I said, I'm pointing this out. This was the easiest franchise to succeed on. Easiest franchise. Taylor Hall scored again last night, by the way. Taylor Hall all of a sudden has now 7 goals on the season. He had 2 when he was traded. He has goals in back-to-back games. 3 goals in his last 4. He's picking up assists. He's getting shots on net. But he's playing like 16 minutes, 15-11, 14-49, 15-50, 14-09, 15-15. Since being traded, has 8 points in 9 games and 5 goals. This is what I expected Taylor Hall to do from the start of the season. So everyone's like, see, told you he was going to be, I knew he was going to be good when he went to Boston. As soon as I saw it, I'm like, oh, he's going to be great there. It's a perfect fit for him. Same thing if he were to go to St. Louis. I'm like, oh, it'd be a great fit for him. He's going to play with Ryan O'Reilly or Jane Schwartz and Vladimir Tarasenko. Like, he would have been money there. So that was an easy team that I knew he was going to succeed in. My issue was never the fact that Taylor Hall, you know, couldn't play. My issue was that at the offseason, he specifically said, I want to go to a winning organization, and then went to Buffalo. That was my only thing. When he got traded, I'm like, oh, yeah, he's going to be great there. He's going to be phenomenal when he goes to Boston. And good on him, by the way, too. I hope he's successful there. I cannot stand the Boston Bruins. But with Taylor Hall there now, Tuukka Rask will come back. You've still got, you know, your goaltender in Yaroslav Halak as your backup goalie, who's proved to be a very successful goaltender. Your defenses look good. McAvoy's been great. Carlo's been good. You got some worries about DeBrusk right now, but your perfection line is rolling. Like, this is what you want. And now you've got Krejci and Taylor Hall as some secondary scoring, something you didn't have last year going into the postseason. It's a perfect spot for him. And I'm happy for Taylor Hall. Now, this offseason, I'm just going to point this out, he is once again an unrestricted free agent. And Boston cannot pay him $8 million a year. Everyone's saying, see what happens when he goes to a winner? Let's see if he stays. If he stays, awesome. Good for him. He's come to his senses. He's having fun there. He knows what winning hockey is like now. Stay there. But Boston's not going to be able to pay $8 million a year. And the more you contribute, the more you produce, the more you think you're going to be worth. And if something doesn't work out and you sign up with a team like the Buffalo Sabres again, or you go to the Ottawa Senators or the Vancouver Canucks, teams that clearly were not trending in the right direction this season, and you're the only acquisition that they make, they are not the Boston Bruins. That's my only point. But again, I'm happy for him. I'm happy that he's scoring. I'm happy he's having fun again. He's a good Canadian boy. Sometimes money, I think, distracts him from what, you know, he really wants and when he enjoys himself. But you know, Boston's going to be a force, and they got the best forward on the market, and he's producing finally now that he's playing with a capable center in David Krejci, and he's playing on the second line. He's averaging like 15 a night. Good on him. They're going to be tough to watch. But I just wanted to make my point about, you know, Taylor Hall, my stance on him, where he is right now. Before we head out, I do want to bring up a couple different things here before we head into the weekend, because I got to be honest with you, I'm ready for the weekend. Hart Trophy power rankings are in right now. Obviously, Connor McDavid's winning this. I talked about the meanings of Connor McDavid. Carlo Koliakov, if you saw this the other day, talked about who he'd rather have starting a franchise, Sidney Crosby or Connor McDavid. He said Connor McDavid. He brought up the fact that Crosby has played with some incredible players like Bill Guerin and Marian Hossa and Evgeny Malkin and Mark Recchi and Jerome Iginla. I'm like, yeah, they're all like 37 plus. That's like Carlos saying Austin Matthews, you know, was so overrated because he's had a chance to play with Jason Spezza and Patrick Marleau and Joe Thornton. I'm like, yeah, they're all 38 and older. Jason Spezza's 30, 38, 39. Thornton's 42. Marleau's 44, 43. Yeah, he's played with them. Not at their peak. He wasn't playing with Marian Hossa when he was a member of the Atlanta Thrashers putting up 40. That's like Washington being like, well, they had Ilya Kovalchuk. Right, but Kovalchuk, who wasn't putting up 50 goals when he was an Atlanta Thrasher. Right? Like, it's very different things. Anyways, it's my thing of people grossly underrating the greatness of Sidney Crosby. And I've said this before. I was always Team Ovechkin. I always respected Crosby because I knew how great he was. And I feel like people forget it every single day. Every single freaking day. Everyone's like, Connor McDavid, Connor McDavid, Connor McDavid. I'm like, yeah, well, Connor McDavid's played with some pretty good players too. And like, he's got a pretty good player with him right now in Leon Draisaitl. Tyson Barrie is playing as great as he can possibly play. He's played with Taylor Hall. He's played with Jordan Eberle, Ryan Nugent-Hopkins. Those aren't Mark Recchi's and Bill Guerin's and all that. And I understand that. I'm just saying. But he played with those guys in their primes or when they were a whole lot younger than when he played with Mark Recchi and Bill Guerin. Those are the names you bring it up at 37, 38, and 40 years old. You're not saying that about Austin Matthews and Mitch Marner because they get to play with Patrick Marleau and Joe Thornton and Jason Spezza. Yeah, because they're in their late 30s, early 40s. And they're not putting up. Jason Spezza, Joe Thornton one season, I'm pretty sure, almost had 100 assists in a year. I think he did. Jason Spezza was like one of the number one tantalizing players in the league when he was with Ottawa. He was getting 75, 80 points a season like nothing. Patrick Marleau was as consistent as could possibly be as an NHLer. Constantly 70, 65, 70, 80 points. It was a funny take that I saw earlier on. Do you guys see the news too about Jaromir Jagr? He's 49 years old. He's played in a playoff game last night. They won 5-2. He had an assist. Just incredible stuff. Yesterday, like I said, a night where multiple teams qualified for the Stanley Cup playoffs. The Washington Capitals booked their postseason spot with an overtime loss to Pittsburgh. Pittsburgh also clinched their spot into the playoffs as well with the OT loss to, with a win against the Capitals a little bit while back as well. And just moving on to, how about Sam Bennett, by the way, in Florida? Man, he's been great. The big news here, Ryan Miller. I can't believe, you know, I'm going to do a little bit of an end segment here on Ryan Miller. Again, this whole thing has been one script. So if I've missed a couple things, I apologize. I want to go on Ryan Miller here. So Ryan Miller says at season's end, he is going to announce his retirement. He said, it's been a privilege to spend 18 years as a professional in this league. I've decided that I'm going to retire after the season, having given more time doing what I love than I could ever have hoped for. Thank you to my teammates and staff, past, present. I'm grateful and thankful to so many who have made my career possible and helped me on the journey from youth hockey to the NHL. Thank you to my family for supporting me with so much love and enthusiasm. So he was a draftee of the Buffalo Sabres back in 1999. He's a fifth round pick. Debuted in 2002-03, spent 11 years in Buffalo, had stops in St. Louis, Vancouver, and Anaheim. He's 40 years of age. He is the winningest goaltender in American-born goaltending history with 390 victories. He's also 14th all-time. He dominated at his peak. He won a Vezina Trophy in 2009 and 2010 with a 41-18-8 record and a .929 save percentage. This stat wasn't out yet, by the way, in 2009-2010. And I know I kind of bash on analytics, but these numbers, there's certain numbers that just make sense. He had a goal saved above average, which is shots on net that are more likely to go in than not, and the goaltender still finds a way to stop it, of 36.2. The average in the NHL right now, a good number, is like 7 or 8. 36.2 is just spectacular. He is also a silver medalist at the Olympics in 2010, posting a .946 save percentage in 6 games before losing to Canada. His career numbers, he has a .914 save percentage and a .263 goals against. And mind you, he's been playing as a backup goalie on a really poor team and still has those numbers. I remember, especially as a Toronto Maple Leafs fan, anytime Toronto went into Buffalo, even when Buffalo was not great and Ryan Miller was on the end of his... Buffalo and Miller were on the end of the runs there for the Sabres. And Toronto would go in and Toronto would come out, you know, and lose the game. It was a hard-fought game. And I'm like, man, the Leafs played well tonight. And Buffalo would win 3-2. And then you look at the stats. Ryan Miller, 38 saves. Ryan Miller, 36 saves. Ryan Miller, 42 saves. He was an absolute... I remember, if you remember the 2010 Olympics, going into that game against the States, Ryan Miller was like the only reason, not the only reason, but like the main reason that everyone was like, the United States might win this thing. Like, Canada's team was gross. You had Niedermeyer on that team. You had a young Drew Doughty, Shea Weber. You had Jerome McGinley, Sidney Crosby, Getzlaf Perry in their primes. You had Jonathan Tate. Like, the team was loaded. And 2006 was a really bad year in Torino. This was a big makeup. It was on home soil. I have never been more nervous for a game in my life. Never. I was sweating through every piece of clothing I owned. I was switching every 20 minutes. I was an absolute mess because I knew Ryan Miller was the state's goaltender. At his peak, he was one of the most dominant goaltenders you could argue at their peaks. He was that good of a goalie. And if you've only been a fan for the last few years and you just haven't had a chance to see it, I feel sorry for you because the goaltending you're seeing right now from guys like Andrei Vasilevsky is like 6'3", 6'4", like 200 pounds. Freddie Anderson is like 6'3", 6'4", 220. Ryan Miller's like, a solid-sized goaltender. He was like goalies then too, like Curtis Joseph and Ed Belfour. Like, those are the guys playing in those days. And if getting to Bock off, 5'10", 5'11". So Ryan Miller comes out, and he's this 6'2", 6'3", goaltender. And he's bigger than everybody. And he's like, oh my gosh, this dude's a monster. But he could move like no other. He was incredibly resilient, never gave up on a play. And I'm thinking of that now. Like, the goaltenders then were not that big, right? Evgeny Nabokov was a little guy. Marty Turco wasn't a very big guy. Remember Marty Turco from Dallas? Olaf Kolzig in Washington. Thomas Volkoon wasn't a very big guy when he was there as well. Just going back and thinking, like, the goaltenders weren't necessarily monstrous. But I remember Ryan Miller as being one of the bigger goalies in the league at the time. And he was 6'3", but this was like, 2005, 6, 7, and 8. And this dude, in his prime time, unbeatable. Unfriggin' beatable. He would go toe-to-toe with some of the best in the world against Luongo and win. He'd go against Belfour and win. And it was an absolute pleasure to watch that man play goaltender, as much as it absolutely tore away and ate me to shreds as a Leaf fan. Congratulations to Ryan Miller on a spectacular season. Vezina winner. One of those players that's going to go down is a guy who never had a chance, but one of the greats of all time to never win a Stanley Cup. Greats of all time is maybe sounds much, but listen, you're in the top 15 all time in wins as a goaltender. You're among the greats, in my opinion. That is it for the show today. Thank you very much. I appreciate you following along with everything being off the cuff. Kind of how we do things over here. Follow along on ST, at ST Hockey Podcast, Twitter, and Instagram, the Hockey Second Thoughts Hockey Podcast on Google Podcasts, Apple Podcasts, Spotify, I don't even know what the mood I'm going to be. I don't even know what mood I'm going to be in come Tuesday, because the NFL draft is going all weekend long and rumors about Aaron Rodgers are getting worse. So I know if you're not a football fan, you have no idea what I'm talking about, but please say a prayer for me and sympathize to all the Packer fans out there who have to go through this. If you are a football fan and you're like, shut up, Kyle, your team's been great for the past two decades with Rodgers and Favre, I don't like it. So there you have it. Enjoy the weekend. I'll see you back on Tuesday's edition of the show. Until then, it's a wrap.